A Skinflint podcast brought to you by Nextmune UK, the specialist in veterinary dermatology and immunotherapy, in association with elearning.vet.
Hello and welcome to the next edition of Skinflint. We're very happy to be coming to you as a podcast through your ears. And in fact, we are going to be today diving into the captivating world, or the enchanting topic of ears. So hopefully we can unravel some of the secrets behind ear health, from kind of common issues to expert solutions that you might get with pets' ears. So yeah, tune in and hopefully we'll get those ears problem free. We're going to be listening in today to Peter Forsyth, who I'm really excited to have join us, because actually Peter was a big part of me getting involved in dermatology when I saw him lecturing a few years ago. So really excited to have Peter lined up to speak to today. But before we bring Peter in, I'm going to introduce you as ever to my two co-hosts today. So yeah, have your auditory senses tickled and your knowledge amplified as I'm joined by my co-host here. It's none other than the fabulous dermatologist extraordinaire, Dr. Sue Irresistible Patterson. Hello, Sue.
Oh, John, does it get any better?
No, it gets worse.
And, you know, I'm really upset. I thought I was your favourite dermatologist, and you've now confessed that your pop idol is Peter. So I don't know whether we can continue with this podcast any further, to be honest with you.
Oh, but, well,
I have to say, Peter's a really good friend. I know him really well, and he's really easy to chat to. He's really very, very well informed. And what's really great about Peter is, although academically he's very gifted, he's a pragmatic practitioner. You know, he really knows how to do things. Everything he does is based on his experience. So I'm really excited that we're going to get some really useful little tips and tricks from him about the best way to use ear cleaners in ears. So yeah, should be a really great podcast.
Absolutely. I think it really will. And I'm glad that, yeah, I could make you jealous, Sue. That was that. Yeah. I never thought that would happen.
Just hurt, John. Hurt. Wounded mortally.
Okay. Well, then let's see if I can mortally wound the other person involved in this podcast, Paul Heesman, who you could describe as the sonic sorcerer who sprinkles enchantment into every sound wave and transforms Skinflint into a mesmerizing auditory experience. Or you could just say he's a producer. So hello, Paul. How are you doing?
Hello, John. That was delightful. I was expecting a lot more of a ribbing there, but no, that was quite nice. Thank you very much.
And not hurt.
So you're my favourite dermatologist, if that helps.
Oh, there you go. That'll make her feel much better. Okay, well, without further ado, then let's bring in Peter Forsyth. Well, hello, Peter. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's really great to have you on Skinflint and for agreeing to come and talk to us about ears, all things pet's ears. You're a dermatologist yourself, aren't you? Perhaps if you wouldn't mind, Peter, just maybe give us a little bit of background on how it is you got to know so much about ears.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, John. Hello, everybody. Yeah, I've been doing this for a while now, but I'm an Edinburgh graduate from 1983, so I'm pretty old now. And I was in mixed general practice for 14 or 15 years, and then specialised and did a residency at Edinburgh. And ended up running the dermatology, or co-running the dermatology referral service in Glasgow, which is a kind of standalone dermatology referral service. That built up from me with my microscope in the back of the car to, well, there are four dermatologists working there at the moment, three boarded and one resident. We spend a lot of our time treating ear disease. It probably makes up very nearly half the caseload, I would think, certainly half the time. Great interest in ear disease, and as I say, it's been an important part of what we do for very many years now.
Yeah.
I was working out the other day, I think I've done about something like 3,000 video otoscopy procedures. I was having
roughly. Well, absolutely. Well, there you go. Well, we are very honoured to have you on here, Peter, because honestly, it's fantastic. And we were sharing just before we came on to record that you're a big reason why I got into dermatology, going to watch a CPD day with you many, many moons ago. So, thanks for joining us. Well, perhaps let's kick us off by just letting us know why is it important to have clean ears. And we're going to mainly focus on dogs today. Obviously, cats are a little bit different, so we'll probably be zeroing in on dogs. But yeah, why is it important for a dog to have clean ears?
Yeah, okay. So how would I answer that? Well, I think, you know, the dog's ear canal is this kind of really long, relatively narrow tube, which is formed by two cartilages, the auricular and annular cartilages, and the ear canal is lined with skin. And that skin contains a lot of glandular tissue. The ear canal produces wax normally. And that wax is made up of the products from the glands and also from the desquamated cells of the skin that lines the ear canal. And that's what forms ear wax, and it's produced continuously. There are situations, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on, where you can get an excessive buildup of wax within the ear canal, and that can have detrimental effects. We'll talk about how the ear canal keeps itself clean later on, I think, but if that cleaning mechanism doesn't work, you get a buildup of wax within the ear, that greatly alters the environment within the ear canal and will kind of increase humidity at the skin surface and can favor the growth of yeast and bacteria that are normal residents within the ear canal. A really excessive buildup of wax can lead to situations of yeast or bacterial infection. And of course, wax within the ear canal, excessive wax within the ear canal can impact on the dog's hearing. And it can do other things. So you can get little funny little concretions of earwax that kind of ball up around the hair that grows deep within the ear canal, just adjacent to the tympanic membrane, the eardrum. And they can actually sit on the eardrum. We call them ceruminoliths. And those structures can weaken the structure of the tympanic membrane and probably do contribute to a degree to perforations of the tympanic membrane, and they can cause discomfort as well. So, you know, all those are things. That's why having, you know, it's important to have clean ear canals if you're a dog. You don't want this situation of increased wax, which can lead to infection and impair hearing and so on.
And Peter, you talked about... Hi, Peter. Hey, so we talked about cleaning ears. We talked about dogs have a natural mechanism to clean their ear, which I think is often referred to as epithelial migration, which may be a term perhaps our veterinary audience may be aware of, perhaps our pet-owning audience might not be. So just talk me through, if you will, simplistically, what's epithelial migration and how it works?
Yeah, so the skin... The very outermost layer of the skin is called the epithelium, and it's made up of layers of cells. And our entire skin constantly renews itself, and it sheds cells, the dead, if you like, the old cells off the skin surface. And the same thing happens within the ear canal. But actually, in the ear canal, when those surface cells detach, they kind of slide off sideways in an upwards and outwards direction towards the opening of the ear canal. So it's like I describe it to clients, and what happens is as they slide off, they carry the wax and debris that enters the ear and the other dead cells, they slowly slither upwards and outwards and out of the ear canal. That's what we term epithelial cell migration. And it's like a kind of very slow moving escalator system, really, that helps to keep the ear canal clean. It moves about the speed your nails grow at. So it's not something you can see, but it is enough to maintain a clean and help to maintain a healthy ear canal. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, that was a perfect explanation. And that's something that's present in all dogs. And how does that change as animals get older? Is that something that sort of gets to wear out a bit as they get a little bit older?
I don't know if we have information on the speed of epithelial cell migration as with age, but certainly there are situations where the, you know, with inflammation and as if the ear is affected by disease in any way, that can certainly impact on epithelial cell migration, and probably slows it down and leads to the increased accumulation of wax within the ear.
So essentially, if the things can interrupt the escalator, someone puts a heavy package on it, or there's a hole in the escalator, then it can't work effectively, and that's why we get buildup of wax inside the ears, I suppose. It all seems incredibly logical, doesn't it, when you think about it? And if you didn't have that escalator, then your ears would just fill up with wax. That's a natural conclusion from that, isn't it?
There's some amazing statistic about the human ear produces something like 2 kilos of earwax in a lifetime. So, you know, that's like a bag of sugar, if you like. So that's a lot of earwax, and you need to have and that's in a healthy ear. So you really need to have this mechanism for getting rid of the wax and keeping things moving. And lots of things impact on how well that escalator system works. Yeah.
So on that basis, what's your recommendation when you're talking to clients, particularly talking to young clients about young dogs, and particularly with some of these breeds where perhaps we recognise they're more susceptible to developing ear disease? Do you recommend routine ear cleaning in puppies, Peter, or no?
No, I don't. I mean, actually, in fairness, in our kind of practice, we very rarely see puppies. But if somebody was to ask me, should I routinely clean my puppy's ears? I would say no. If they're healthy, leave them well alone. You know, the mechanism is working perfectly well. Don't upset the natural order of things, the natural stasis or homeostasis within the ear canal don't interfere with that system. What I do think is a good idea is for people, young puppies, especially breeds that perhaps are more prone to ear disease, like, you know, Cocker Spaniels, for example, is to get their puppies used to having their ears handled and examined and, you know, lift the ear flap up and have a feel around the ear canal and get them used to that, because that may well pay dividends in the future where if and when they really do need to have their ears cleaned. But no, I don't routinely recommend cleaning of healthy, you know, of ears and puppies if they're otherwise healthy. Of course, puppies can get ear disease and, you know, ear mites and so on, or very early signs of other ear problems, in which case you might have to start something, but routinely, no.
So even if you've got dogs with really hairy ear canals, you wouldn't routinely advise cleaning, or should we tackle that thorny issue of missing ears? You wouldn't consider doing either of those in young dogs either.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, the thorny issue of hairy ears and what you should do with them. My view, I mean, you know, the issue here is if you have a dog with very hairy ear canals, and there are certain breeds that have extremely hairy ear canals, breeds like poodles, for example, or some Bichons and so on, there are other examples. The problem with having hairy ears is that it tends to trap the wax that moves naturally up and out of the ear canal and can result in kind of blockage of the outer opening of the ear canal, and that can lead to problems. So the question is, should you, if you have a young dog or a puppy with hairy ears, should you pluck those ears routinely to try and prevent this situation from arising? The problem with plucking ears is it's painful and inflammatory. If you pull hair out of the skin, it's a painful thing to do. And it will produce inflammation within the ear. And if the ear isn't diseased, but it's just hairy, then I would not advocate plucking the ears in that situation. If the dog has started to develop otitis, then some routine hair plucking probably does become necessary in some of those cases. But no, if the ears are healthy and they're just hairy, leave them well alone. One of my pet bugbears, or one of the really difficult situations that we come across in practice, is dogs that have become ear phobic. That is, they've had bad experiences that mean they just won't let anybody go near their ears anymore. And it's possible to get around that, but it's easier to prevent that in the first place. And plucking ears and creating, you want to avoid anything that causes unnecessary discomfort in dogs' ears, in my view. And I think plucking is one of those things.
So would you routinely clean a dog with hairy ears then, Peter, rather than plucking it? Would that be the sort of exception to the rule, or would you just monitor those? What's your feeling on them?
Well, I think if you had a dog where it was clear that there was wax accumulating, if you looked into the external ear and you could see wax starting to accumulate on the hair, in that situation, then yes, we probably would start to introduce some, that might be a justification for introducing some routine ear cleaning in a breed like that. And I guess similarly, you could say the same with a dog with very pendulous ears. But it's a fine balance because, too much cleaning can also be detrimental. Wetting the ear canal can affect the ear canal lining. So it's a thing to think about carefully and assess each individual carefully before you make that decision.
So we're talking about ear cleaning, Peter. And, as a pet owner, when I perhaps look on the internet, I go to an internet pharmacy, there are so many different ear cleaners that are there, different prices, different makes. How do you decide when you're looking to ear clean what you want to actually use? So, what would you look for in a routine ear cleaner? What would you look for if you wanted to remove wax? Are there little clues we can give our listeners as to what components of ear cleaners are going to be really useful?
Yeah, boy, that's a huge subject. There are many, many different ingredients in ear cleaners, but we can sort of broadly divide them into products that soften or even dissolve earwax. You'd look for something on the bottle that might say ceruminolytic, for example, and that is an earwax dissolving product. And they include a whole bunch of different ingredients. So things like propylene glycol or mineral oils or glycerin, salicylic acid.
I think a really common one is sodium docosate, isn't it? That's seen in a lot of different ear cleaners as something to break up wax as well.
Yeah, that's DOSS. Yeah, that's a surfactant. That's really like a detergent, which is a quite a potent wax dispersant, really, and carbamyl peroxide, which is probably equally or even more potent than that. That's not one I recommend using in conscious dogs' ears, actually. But so that there's a whole bunch of those, which they do have different potencies. So diethyl sodium sulfosuccinate, DOSS, and carbamyl peroxide, and some of these other are actually ceruminolytic. Salicylic acid will also break down cells, desquamated cells. So they have a more potent action than, for example, the kind of the wax softeners like propylene glycol or glycerine, the mineral oils and so on.
So essentially what we're saying is it depends how waxy the ear is as to how strong, if you will, the wax removing product is. So a dog that's got mild waxy ears certainly wouldn't have some of those really potent products. They might perhaps have something like an oil-based or a propylene glycol-based cleaner. Exactly. So is that what you would recommend?
That is exactly what I'm saying. And I think it kind of worries me, actually, that people, you could just go on the internet and buy something. I mean, I really would strongly recommend, if anybody's listening to this and your dog does have waxy ears, do go and speak to your vet about it. Don't just buy an unknown product off the internet. But yeah, those are the things to look for, is the propylene glycol mineral oil type product for a less waxy ear, for the more severe waxy ears where there's a lot of material to remove, then a more potent one with a detergent type of thing like diacrylic sodium sulfosuccinate would be a more appropriate product in that situation.
Yeah, that's really helpful, Peter. And I think what's coming through loud and clear, if you'll pardon the pun, no, my co-host won't, but is that there's a real consideration between kind of managing a dog's ears in terms of literally themselves and making sure that they're comfortable with it, that they're happy that you're doing it, and because otherwise it's going to be really difficult to do it. And then also considerations in terms of what you're using with different ears. And I mean, obviously there's loads of different products there, like you say, but I think that one key message that you said there about was getting advice from your vet, I think that's really helpful. And obviously I suppose if you are a vet or a vet nurse in practice who are the ones listening to the podcast, maybe that somebody would be coming in to speak to, clearly I think it's a good idea, isn't it, to have a little bit of an understanding about your ear cleaners and to know kind of what would be appropriate as a general cleaner, as you've described there, or in different situations?
Absolutely. And one of the things that we quite often see is a situation where people are using an aqueous ear cleaner. So that's like a watery ear cleaner to try and dissolve wax, which isn't really logical, to be honest. So, we talked a little bit about the cerumenolytic ear cleaners, but we also have the wax dissolving ear cleaners, but there are also a group of ear cleaners that are not composed of oils or detergent type products, but they are literally watery solutions. And those are not appropriate really for trying to, they don't dissolve wax. And the other thing actually, just if I could just say it as well, is putting ear cleaners into dogs' ears. So it is an uncomfortable thing for them. And when, when we show clients how to clean ears, I mean, I like to get the dog, or our nurses get the dog on the table and actually physically demonstrate with the dog and with getting the owner to get their fingers where they need to be on the ear canal to show them how to massage the ear and so on. It's important to demonstrate how to use the product carefully, but also how to use an ear cleaner effectively. But also a really good tip I find is to have the client warm the product before it goes into the ear. They tolerate it so much better. So if you're using a syringe, you can run the syringe under the hot tap until it's at body temperature. You don't want it hot, obviously, but body temperature, and it's just so much nicer for the dog.
The Skinflint podcast brought to you by Nextmune UK, specialists in veterinary dermatology and immunotherapy. Nextmune also bring you products such as Otodine and CLX wipes, market-leading products in the management of skin and ear cases.
Yeah, that's really helful, Peter. Thank you. And, I think what's really clear there is that absolutely not just reaching for the same cleaner, having an understanding about those, and that tip particularly so useful in terms of also thinking about, what's comfortable for them in terms of temperature and things. I mean, sometimes there are other, obviously, preparations you touched on there about things that would be considered more of a flush, which may well have their the appropriate time to be used between the difference between those and a cleaner. What about powders as well? Because sometimes in the past it's been seen, or there may be products out there for powders. Are those ever appropriate?
Yes, I'm old enough to remember ear powders being used much more routinely in dogs' ears. Another one of my pet hates, really, but powders are not appropriate to put into dogs' ears. You know, they really just can completely clog things up. You know, you mix powder with liquid or powder with wax, and you're going to get an even stickier, drier, harder concretion within the dog's ear that takes a bit of removal. So yeah, please don't use powders in dog's ears. I really would not recommend that.
Thank you. Well, that's really helpful. So in terms of then, once the ears, obviously in a more of a disease process, like things are going a bit wrong, we're not in the land of just reaching for perhaps just a regular ear cleaner now, what changes in the ear? What happens in terms of the inside of the ear canal? And I know you've touched on the tympanic membrane, the eardrum there as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one thing that you can be fairly sure of. If a dog gets ear and an infection or an inflammation in the ear, it's very likely to happen again at some point in the future. And it might be 2 weeks later, it might be 2 months later, it might be a year later, but you can be, you know, the chances are that that problem's going to recur. And it very often with dogs, it keeps recurring. And you know, there are many dogs that get treatment two or three times a year. They go into the vet, the dog gets a sore ear, they go to the vet, they get ear drops, and the problem settles down and then comes back again. And every time you have another episode of infection or inflammation in the ear, there are kind of detrimental and cumulative effects within the ear canal. So the ear canal lining becomes thicker. The tissues that form the ear canal become swollen and edematous. The glandular structures within that are present within the skin lining the ear canal start to increase in size, and in some cases they can become massive. So breeds like Cocker Spaniels, and they've had very chronic ear disease over long periods of time, can end up with almost like bunches of grapes growing within the ear canal. So all the swelling and the inflammation and the thickening of the tissues and results in narrowing of the ear canal. And that we talked about epithelial cell migration, that becomes impaired with inflammation. So the ear doesn't clear the wax out very quickly. And then on top of that, the enlargement of the glandular tissue results in an increased production of wax. So you get this double whammy effect. And getting more wax produced and not getting rid of it so easily in a narrower, swollen ear canal. And that really starts to block things up. Air doesn't circulate, the humidity increases, and that really favors further growth of yeast and bacteria that are present within the ear anyway. And you mentioned the eardrum, one of the more, you know, serious things that can happen. Well, it's all serious, but is perforation of the eardrum. The eardrum becomes weakened in that situation, and the hole can form in the eardrum, and then infection can extend through into the middle ear cavity, which is a much more inaccessible area, much harder to treat infections in the middle ear rather than the outer part of the ear canal. So yeah, all that's going on repeatedly. And of course, ultimately, you know, if ear disease is allowed to continue for many years, the ear canal, the cartilage of the ear canal can become calcified and almost like becomes like bone. So it's narrow and bony, and we would call that an end stage ear. And in that situation, often the only thing that can be done is it's a horribly painful situation for the dog, and the only thing that can be done to relieve the pain and give the dog a better quality of life is actually a fairly drastic bit of surgery, which is removal of the ear canal. So we try and avoid that at all costs, obviously.
And one of the things we don't really have time to talk about today, Peter, but we will come back and probably grab you again for another podcast at some stage, is, of course, these dogs always have underlying disease of some description that actually triggers all that really severe change that's there. Mm. What I want to talk about, though, just very briefly, is you talked about infection in ears, whether it's with yeast, whether it's bacteria. That when we get that sort of infection, you know, these are animals that then need to go to the vet. They need to have some treatment. When vets are prescribing products, though, to help deal with infection and reduce the inflammation, how important is ear cleaning at that point? We've got great long-acting products now. Do you recommend ear cleaning in every situation where there's infection there and there's those more severe changes?
Yeah, I mean, there's a pretty strong argument for ear cleaning in any situation where a dog requires, you know, antibiotic, antifungal treatment, eardrop preparations. That in most situations where you've got a yeast or bacterial infection, you get an increased amount of discharge within the ear canal. That discharge is covering the surface of the ear canal. And when we put the mainstay of treatment for infection in dog's ears are eardrop preparations. And in order to work effectively, they need to get to the surface of the ear canal lining, the skin lining the ear canal, to be effective. And when you've got a buildup of wax and discharge within the ear canal, that prevents physically, for one thing, prevents the drops from getting to where they need to get to in order to work. So, that's the situation in the vast majority of dogs with ear disease, and if they have discharge present in the ear canal, then they should be having their ears cleaned prior to putting an eardrop preparation in the ear, which is going to treat the infection and inflammation.
And essentially, when we're looking at those types of ear cleaners, we're looking more at sort of antiseptic type cleaners, aren't we? With those types of ear problems, is that right?
Yes, I mean if it's a for example, in yeast and perhaps staphylococcal infections, Malassezia yeast and staphylococcal infections, you often do have a ceruminous, a waxy discharge. So you want your ear cleaner to do a couple of things. You want it to remove the wax. We've talked about that already. But we also want it to have an antimicrobial effect within the ear canal, ideally. There are ear cleaning products with most, which definitely do have antiseptic effects. So things like isopropyl alcohol is a good antiseptic. PCMX, parachloromethoxazolinol, is another common antiseptic that's found in some ear cleaners. Chlorhexidine is found in some ear cleaners. Trizidta and chlorhexidine is a common combination, effective antiseptic combination. So it's good to look for an ear cleaner that's not just going to remove the discharge, but also is going to have some antiseptic effect. And there is evidence actually that antiseptic ear cleaners used as a sole treatment can be helpful, can result in resolution of infection.
And that's really interesting. We did a podcast a little while ago talking to some Scandinavians, and we talked about how important it is in Scandinavia to avoid antibiotic use, as of course it is in the UK, and use antiseptics. Yeah. So what I want to finish with Peter, is I want to create a hypothetical situation for you and say, I am just about to launch my own practice. And what I'm looking at what do I need to have on the shelf in the way of ear cleaning products? So I don't want to have huge numbers of products there. And I don't want you to mention names and trade names and all the rest of it. But when I'm looking at selecting key types of ear cleaners that I need to have on my shelf, what would be your three key ear cleaners you would have if you were looking at stocking your pharmacy on your first day at work?
Yeah, good question. It's baffling, I think, for people when they look at the array of ear cleaners. Like, what do I really need here? You know, and I think three is a good number. So you would want to have a soothing, mildly wax softening, dissolving ear cleaner for those mildly waxy ears. Perhaps the dog with you know, the hairy ears are getting a bit waxy, doesn't have ear disease, but, or the dog with very pendulous ears, which is prone to becoming waxy, and you want to prevent problems. So that mildly wax-dissolving ear cleaner, you know, it might have a glycerine or a propylene glycol or a mineral oil present in it that is, you know, and a lot of them got other kind of herbal type extracts and so on, but chamomile and so on. But so you'd want one like that. You'd then want a more potent ceruminolytic ear cleaner. It could have a detergent in it, such as DOSS. I do like the carbamyl peroxide one, but I wouldn't use that one in a conscious dog, but a propylene glycol.
Ceruminal solvent type
ear cleaner with an antiseptic effect in it. You know, it might have chlorhexidine, it might have ECMX, whatever, might have an alcohol as an antiseptic. That would be the second one. And then the third one I would have would be one of these aqueous ones that we would tend to use in a purulent, pussy otitis cases, your Pseudomonas type of case. And that would probably be a Tris-EDTA and chlorhexidine-based product is the one I would use. And it's comfortable to use. It doesn't irritate the ear, but it's very good at breaking up purulent material, and it also can potentiate the effect of the antibiotic that you might be using in that ear canal as well. So those are the three I would have.
That's really helpful. Thank you, Peter. And actually, you know, I think what I've taken from this is that we have to think about what is on your shelf. I think it's you know, it's really important to consider what cleaner that you're using rather than just using one. Try and make it, you know, really comfortable for the patient, and then they're going to tolerate it more long term, and think about that when you're choosing your ear cleaner. But then also, actually, I think you've done some great work to demystify there what ear cleaners would use. It's not quite so scary as maybe it first seems. So thank you, Peter. And I mean, we could talk about this for a long, long time. There's clearly loads that we could learn from you. And like Sue said, we'll have to get you back on in the future, I think. But for now, I need to let you go and say, well, thank you very much for joining us on SkinFlint. Yeah, kind of clearing up those ear mysteries for us.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Sue. Thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was a really fascinating conversation with Peter, and yeah, so excited to have him join us. And he really did kind of demystify some of the stuff. I think early on in that conversation, Sue, I was thinking, we're getting quite a lot of technical terms and things, and it could be intimidating. I remember when I got into trying to learn about ear cleaners, there was a vast world, but he really did clarify a lot about, you know, which ear cleaners to use, didn't he?
I think so. And I think the other thing too that he, I think, hammered home for us is how important ear cleaning is. We're really blessed now when we've got some fantastic products we can use in ears as veterinary surgeons. These long-acting products are fantastic. There's no doubt about it. Help with owner compliance, help get around some of these ear phobias. But there's still no doubt about it. You do still need to clean ears. You can't really take shortcuts. So I think the fact that he can talk about it so eloquently is going to be really, really useful to our listenership. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, and also hearing just at the beginning how much of his caseload was ear-based, I thought that was incredible. And also, what was that stat that you said about how much earwax was removed? Or something? Was it like
two kilograms in your lifetime, which I think has slightly traumatized me.
That is 2 kilograms. Okay, right. So here you go, guys. If you had to carve something or mold something out of 2 kilograms of earwax, what would you make?
So you see, I can do that because I am someone who has read Harry Potter, and I know what they use earwax for. They use earwax to make those sweets that they hand around. Do you not remember the scene from Harry Potter where they hand around the sweets and they pick it out, and I think it's Dumbledore tucks into one of these special boiled sweets and it's earwax flavored. So I know they use earwax. They make them into sweets to use at Hogwarts. Simple, easy.
That's so disgusting. Paul?
It's very good. I'm not sure I can top that. I think if I had a 2 kilogram block of earwax, I would carve out a Skin Flint trophy for my favourite dermatologist, Sue Patterson.
Oh, wow. He really
I'm pleased I milk this now. The sympathy vote. I've certainly won on that respect. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Although I probably upset Peter, I suspect.
Paul's trying to be your favourite producer, I think. I can't stop thinking about that in Shrek when he just pulls a wad of earwax out his ear and makes a candle out of it. It's just so disgusting.
It's very sustainable, though, John. Very sustainable. Perhaps this could help with global warming. If we start to recycle earwax.
There could be
earwax recycling centres at your local supermarket, so you could go down with your bucket and scoop out some earwax.
Well, watch out for this, guys, on the next SkinFlint, sponsored by the Earwax Recycling Facility set up by Sue Patterson. We can look forward to that one. Everybody, thanks for listening in. I'm really trying hard not to just live with ear puns here, but thanks for joining us for SkinFlint. And until next time, I'll say farewell to these two, Paul and Sue. Bye, guys.
Bye. See you guys.
Farewell from me. Bye, everyone.
The SkinFlint podcast brought to you by Nextmune UK, the specialist in veterinary dermatology and immunotherapy in association with elearning.vet.